Welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. I'm Bill Powers, president of the University of Texas at Austin, which is home to the brand new Beagle Center for New Media, a state-of-the-art building that will help our communication students receive the first-class education they need to change the world. And now, here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the fourth week of August. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hi there.
And Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Boy, doesn't this audio quality sound great?
I have no idea. I don't have my headphones on. But this is the first and so far, as far as we've planned, the only time that we will be recording the Tribcast at the new KUT studios, which are quite swanky.
Yeah, they're shiny. It's the first time I've been in a radio facility where everything wasn't broken.
And just like John Ailey, I too can see out the window.
I think it's fair to say that this is our first legitimate podcast.
Let's see how it goes.
Is that because Evan's not here?
You mean using equipment that wasn't purchased in the at the back of Walmart somewhere? Is that?
I was really just trying to make an Aiken joke.
Oh, legitimate. Oh. That's very good.
But that's that's our first topic.
This is going well.
We're going to talk about abortion issues. We're going to talk about medical schools, particularly those that may or may not crop
up
in the Valley someday. And then we will also talk about the upcoming political conventions in the nation. Maybe we should start.
In the nation.
Well, not the state, because, you know, they're of less importance.
Reeve's trying out a Stephen Colbert outfit. He's got a bow tie on. It's very nice.
I never wear bow ties. Don't give people the wrong impression. But there was some news very recently regarding Planned Parenthood.
There was some big news regarding Planned Parenthood. So Planned Parenthood has filed suit to try to stay in the women's health program. This is the state contraception and cancer screening program for low-income women. Basically, Planned Parenthood used to be in the program. The state of Texas said, we don't want you in the program anymore. Excuse me.
I'm getting choked up about it.
It's a beautiful studio. I know. It's really great.
Basically, what the courts ruled... let's see, what day are we doing this? The courts ruled this week. That's a good
there
way
you
to
go.
Like today, we're recording this on Wednesday.
Yesterday. The court ruled yesterday that that in the meantime, while this is working its way through the courts, the state can proceed and kick Planned Parenthood out of this program. So it was a big win for the state, actually a big day for the state in measures that the state was fighting against the federal government in court.
Along with the EPA suit. Right.
So the ruling favors the state, does not favor Planned Parenthood, and obviously that's a big W in the state's category.
So is the state ready, though, to take these women and does the state have doctors ready for these women?
You know, that's the question. And the doctors are not very happy with the state right now because the state has been preparing to run this program without Planned Parenthood. And they've also been writing some really strict rules. And some of these rules for this new and improved program would not allow doctors to even really talk to their female patients about the prospect of abortion. And so doctors have sort of revolted and said, these rules are ridiculous. You think you want to get, doctors outside of Planned Parenthood to participate in this program, you know, we're not game.
And that was an open letter from the Texas Medical Association, right?
Not just the TMA, but the obstetrics and gynecology folks, the family physicians. I mean, it's been, you even had Republican State Representative Sarah Davis write a letter. She's a breast cancer survivor saying, right, you know, you guys have gone too far.
She's also got a Democratic opponent in the November election, so she's tacking a little bit that direction.
Right.
Who writes these rules? Is it legislators?
These are rules that attorneys write for the agency under their interpretation of lawmakers' legislation. So basically, it's the state agency's interpretation of what lawmakers
It's the
pass.
Perry administration's version of what the law should say.
Exactly.
Right.
And so it's sort of like a lot of cooks, but none of them are actually cooks.
And this is something
No actual doctors writing the...
I mean,
there's some doctors in the system.
Yeah. There are some doctors in the system, but I think overwhelmingly, if they'd asked this question to a handful of doctors, they would have gotten the same response, which is, you know, stay out of my business.
Now, these are proposed rules, is that right? So they still have to go through a couple more hurdles before the doctors can be extremely mad?
Yes, although I would suggest that proposed rules generally become rules. Again, all the attorneys at the state agency have to say is, you know, this is our interpretation of what the legislature passed. So, you know, if you all want to revisit what the legislature passed, you know, feel free to do that in January.
At some point in this, they have to reconcile the medicine that the doctors are arguing about with the funding streams and the politics that everybody else is arguing about. And that's sort of down the road a bit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've got a little time for them to sort that out. But, you know, the medical groups have gotten involved at this juncture. So, I mean, clearly this has been a big week for abortion-related news on all fronts. You know, you had Texas lawmakers, both in Washington and in Texas, really come out swinging against the comments made by Todd Akin, the legitimate rape comments that we're now all so familiar with. You know, I think part of what's been interesting to dissect in this is that the whole reason that Akin was making those comments was to try to sort of defend his position that abortion in almost all circumstances is wrong. You know, that is largely a sentiment shared by Texas's top Republican leadership.
Well, what he was really trying to argue was that, I mean, what he was insinuating that some women lie about getting raped.
Well, there was a. There's
that's
a, there's
what,
a,
that's well, what he was trying to say.
There's but, a wrong, there's a running argument over the difference between rape and quote unquote forcible rape,
right.
And they're trying to redefine it as, you know, this is a, you know, as you say, this one was characterized as rape but may not have been, and this one was actually a rape, and you know, I mean, there's just he didn't say anything that really he can defend. There's not really
well,
a way to get
well,
out.
Or, I mean, and get, science can defend.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
right.
get beyond whether or not he meant legitimate or forcible or not statutory or whatever, then there's the whole idea that the woman can just decide to not get pregnant based on it.
Actually, if you listen to Radiolab, which I don't know if KUT airs Radiolab, ducks can do this, apparently. But he wasn't
ducks
talking about ducks. He was talking about human women.
Ducks get so raped.
Yes. No, you got to listen to this episode. I highly recommend it.
All right. Moving on.
Well, the Akin thing, I mean, just to talk about the politics for a minute, the Akin mm-hmm. thing's interesting. You know, he could still win this race. Claire McCaskill hadn't polled above 45%
right.
for 18 months. She's really got some political problems. And he is a sitting U.S. rep. And, you know, depending on how that goes locally, it's still feasible that he could win that race. But he's put all the other Republicans into this argument that they didn't want to be in, into this conversation that they didn't want to be in, you know, 8 days before the Republican convention starts.
Right,
and so
exactly.
He sort of puts this doormat out there that everybody has to step across on their way to their national moment.
Well, Reeve didn't mean to step on you.
Oh, no,
what, I mean, what's fascinating
more
is we're heading into the Republican convention, and, you know, at the convention, there's a platform that Republicans are getting ready to vote on that where, you know, abortion in cases of rape and incest is not on the table. You know, it's only when the mother's life is in danger. And that's where Perry comes down on this. That's where Abbott, Dewhurst, Cruz, you know, the whole crew, that's where they come down on this issue. So
I went back and looked at our polling over the last couple of years on this. Generally speaking, these numbers change a little bit, but they're sort of still within the margin of error. 12 to 15% say abortion should never be allowed. Around 29 to 33% say it should be allowed only in cases of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. There's a group out on the and that says it should always be allowed and should be a matter of choice. That's around 33 to 35%. And then there's a group that says it should be allowed when it's quote unquote medically necessary, and that makes up the rest. Generally speaking, in Texas, Texas is, you know, vaguely pro-choice. It's about 50% pro-choice in some form, about 45-48% pro-life in some form. So, you know, if you're a Republican, if you're a Rick Perry, you're looking at this and saying, okay, so where are most of the Republicans? And you're, you know, safely in the pro-life area. You know, there's pro-choice Republicans, there's pro-life Democrats, but you're safely in the pro-life area if you're a Republican. To go this extra step and to say not in the sort of the traditional three cases, it's kind of untested. That's interesting.
Right. Well, and that was a campaign revelation as well. He was
for Perry,
on the road.
Right around Christmas.
Mm-hmm. He was on the road in Iowa, and you know, his poll numbers were bleeding heavily, and he all of a sudden had that revelation.
He said he'd watched a movie.
And then a woman came up to him right. afterward. Yeah, I'm sorry. He watched Right to Life movie that Huckabee had been taking around the country, and then was approached by a woman afterwards. And, you know, she said that
her mother was raped and that she was the product of this union. And, you know, do you really want to say that people like me shouldn't have a chance? Basically. And he said he was so moved by it that, you know, it changed his perspective. It did not change his poll numbers, and I think it was kind of interesting timing. But, you know, I think Texas Right to Life sent out this, you know, big email blast basically saying, you know, poor Aiken. Everybody's beating up on him. This is absolutely ridiculous. You know, he's a scapegoat. You know, yet you had Rick Perry's, you know, staff really couldn't say enough bad things about Aiken. You know, they just were coming out with sort of statement after statement, upping the ante of how far they wanted to go. Cornyn basically suggested he should bow out of the race. Texas Republicans were not giving this guy any wiggle room at all.
Well, and just as a sidebar, Cornyn's really important here because he's the head of the National Senate Congressional Committee. So he's the guy running the Senate's Republican money.
The group that pulled $5 million from him, from Aiken. Right. Is that correct?
Right.
People have been comparing this Aiken moment to the Clady Williams infamous rape joke moment. Is that a fair... Well, is there a parallel to draw there?
Well, I'll play old guy here. You know, Clady Williams...
You don't have to play it.
I was going to play old guy this week.
Clady Williams' comment was made in April after the primaries and didn't move the numbers much. You know, what killed Clady Williams was a bunch of other missteps along the way.
Can you say what his comment was?
He said that rape is like bad weather, that you just should...
If it's inevitable.
If it's inevitable, just sit back, relax, and enjoy it.
He was trying to make a joke.
He was. And it's, you know, part of the reaction at the time was people, you know, particularly in West Texas, you know, where I grew up, you know, women and men saying, you know, I've heard that joke all my life. I don't like it, but I've heard that, you know, I mean, he wasn't saying, you know, what Aiken did that was different was that you've got this piece of, you know, weird science, right? You know, that women can shut this on and off. You've got this strange interpretation of what is and is not a rape. You've got a whole bunch of policy things that are involved in it. You know, Clady popped off and shouldn't have and paid a price for that. Aiken is in a policymaking position. He's on the Science and Technology Committee in the House. He's in a Senate race that the Republicans really, really wanted to win. And he's, like I said, he's setting out the welcome mat for their convention 8 days before they start.
Maybe he should visit with some of the science and technology staffers and get down, you know, human biology. Maybe that would be a good thing.
All right. Yeah, he can come back to us with a book report on what he learned.
That's right.
Let's move from West Texas to South Texas, though, where...
I thought you were going to make the easy convention.
No, because I've already promised the listeners that was going to be our third topic.
Oh, okay.
They're very particular about the order we go in.
This is clearly so smooth the way you do this, Alan.
Well, it would have been, except for if Emily hadn't complained, which is true of a lot of the Tribune operations, I think.
Everything would have been fine unless if Emily hadn't complained. Yeah. Yep.
So South Texas, the University of Texas system recently announced their intention to build a sort of freestanding medical school down in South Texas. Now, there are a lot of questions about whether or not the announcement can lead to something that exists. And I think it's the timing of it, if not surprise some people, definitely
raise
some eyebrows. Yeah. Emily, you follow healthcare, which is why I went to you first on the abortion thing. What do you think the likelihood of the first medical school graduating from UT system in the Valley is in 2018, as they've promised?
You know, I think it's still probably relatively likely, but Texas A&M has thrown a new wrench in here because, basically you have a situation where, look, the sort of unspoken, or in some cases spoken criticism is that, you know, why the heck has it taken UT so long to get this med school in South Texas? By the way, we've wanted this for 2 decades. We've been asking for it. You know, I think there are a lot of South Texas folks who see how quickly UT has been sort of responding to the conversation around a med school in Austin and saying, you know, what the hell? Why is this moving so fast? Why is there the perception that the wheels are in motion in Austin when we've been waiting so long in South Texas? And enter John Sharp and Texas A&M, who have sort of, just literally half an hour ago got a text message from John Sharp, you know, suggesting that basically they see a need in South Texas. South Texas has come to them and that they, you know, it sounds like they want to explore a med school down there. So I think now you have people like Chuy Hinojosa who are saying, okay, you know, hey, look, competition is a good thing. You know, we're sort of used to being the scorned lovers down here. You know, nobody really wants us. And then all of a sudden we have 2 people knocking at our door. Right. So
UT's been dithering. So did they go to A&M or did A&M go to them, or any feel for that?
It's a little unclear. I think the conversation has been going both ways. I know that, you know, Sharp went down to the Valley. The Valley folks went up to A&M. So I think that there it's been going back and forth. But, you know, this is only in the last few months that this conversation with A&M has started, whereas this UT conversation has been going on for you know.
So if A&M hadn't showed up with a corsage, would UT have even done this press release and done this 2018 graduating class thing, or were they prompted by A&M's
interest? That's the question.
The UT system has been making it clear that they, ever since they really got serious about the Austin push, they've always added a South Texas element of it whenever they talked about it. So when they said, oh, you know, we'll look into making this Austin Medical School, they also said, and we're going to give $30 million to the Valley so we can start laying the groundwork for a medical school down there.
Right.
So, I mean, they've been talking about it for openly in their regents meetings for more than a year now. So, I mean, they could and would probably make the case that, you know, they've been working on it, they've been investing in it. But I think some people are just ready to go. And John Sharp has come in at the A&M system and is just sort of refashioning it in his image. I mean, he's like, you know, going after a law school. He's moving the administration of the Health Science Center under the university. He's making all the big staff changes and just moving stuff around. And so, I mean, he's looking for opportunities anywhere he can grab them. He's more than happy to step on UT's toes down in the Valley.
It's probably too early to ask this, but do you have any sense, either of you, on if the legislature has any lean here? If you threw these both out and said, would you rather go A&M? Would you rather go UT? Would you rather go Central Texas? Would you rather go South Texas? Is that part of the game begun?
You know,
I'm not sure. Frankly, personally, I'm not sure there's money for any medical school.
Yeah, the question really is will the local tax base pay up in a way that makes any of that feasible?
This is some of the Central Texas argument, right? That they can produce some taxes, and that South Texas, you know, without them actually saying we're in competition, it's like we can present some local money to this thing.
Right. This is also the Hidalgo County versus Cameron County argument down there. Right. You know, the Cameron County, UT already has existing facilities. Two of its three healthcare facilities down there are in Cameron County, in Brownsville and Harlingen. You know, the A&M conversations seem to be happening more with the Hidalgo County side of the South Texas delegation and the McAllen folks and the folks from Doctors Hospital at Renaissance, who have a lot of sway. You know, I think it's also sort of laying the groundwork. In Hidalgo County, you've got a bigger, you know, double the tax base than you do in Cameron County. So I think you're seeing these kinds of conversations both in Austin and in South Texas. I'm not sure the Ledge is going to have much sway one way or the other, because I don't think they've
got money. But the Ledge will definitely talk about it, though, I think. I really think that medical schools have the potential to sort of really take over the conversation in the legislature, especially because, so you have all this movement. Like I said, Sharp is trying to move his health science center under the A&M University administration.
Right.
The proposed medical school in Austin will be under the UT administration. UNT is also looking into moving their health science center under the University of North Texas administration. And Texas has not ever really had...
So this is basically just what you're saying is, instead of it being a separate institution under the system, it would be part of North Texas main campus.
And
Central Texas Hospital would be part of UT Austin.
Right. And basically, ever since UTMB became its own thing, Texas has not had public research universities that also had med schools as part of them. They've always been separate. And all of our funding formulas and different systems have been built up and, you know, tweaked over the years, assuming that that was the case. And this could make them have to sort of rewrite a lot of
Does this have anything to do with courting Hispanics?
I mean, I think, you know, I
it
guess...
It kind of does,
Well,
yeah.
I mean, my feeling on this is, no matter how this ends up, all of this heightened attention is good for South Texas, because South Texas has been trying to make this happen for years and years and years, and no one has really paid them all that much attention. I mean, it came up in the Ledge sort of quietly in committee meetings, you know, all the years that I've been there. Regardless of what happens in Austin, you now have so much attention on this issue and on the fact that South Texas now has been asking for it for this long. There's no way Austin gets a med school without South Texas getting a med school first. I believe.
Well, but part of that is up to South Texas a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And up to voters down there, up to the tax base. But I just think, you know, if at the end of the day, Austin got a med school before South Texas did, there would be a lot of people crying, you know. I mean, you might even see claims of racism. I mean, this is, part of the country that, part of the state that really has a serious dearth of the kind of healthcare facilities that are needed for poor people.
But you wouldn't hear people crying in Austin, though, and that's where the capital is, and that's, you know, which has historically gotten more attention than South Texas.
Right.
You know, I mean,
there's also, you know, out there on the fringes of this is the, you know, the you know, one of the oldest fights in Texas. It's the Aggies and the Longhorns, you know, mm-hmm. And you've got, you know, UT on one side of this fight and all of the powers and forces that they can bring to bear, and you've got A&M on the other side, and, you know, they've got a governor. I mean, this could be kind of interesting.
This really is going to make up for the football game.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right.
And then, yeah. And then 12 years from now, the hospitals will leave for the SEC. That's a whole different play.
Yeah, let's move on to another big historical fight, which is between the Republicans and the Democrats of the nation. The Republican convention is coming up first. Yep. Are any of us going?
No.
Jay Root is going.
Right.
But we do have, there are some Texans going for sure.
Ted Cruz is the, you know, the first one out of the bucket. And, you know, this is the fight over the Hispanic vote right now. And the Republicans want to showcase some of their, you know, rising stars, like they always do, and in particular, you know, when they can, minorities. Ted Cruz is a comer here. He defeated the establishment in David Dewhurst. He's a brand new face. He's a, you know, we'll find out if he's a good speaker on national television, you know, but he's got a spotlight position. The Democrats, you know, there was a weird day, Election Day. The Democrats announced the morning of Election Day in Texas, the morning of the runoff in Texas, that Mayor San Antonio was going to be at theirs, Julian Castro. And at the end of the day, we got the results from the Republican primary, and it was pretty clear that Ted Cruz was going to get something from the Republicans. So the Republicans come into their convention. Ted Cruz is one of the things they're going to be talking about. I think they're afraid they're going to be talking about everything Aiken brought up. And they go for, somebody help me here, is it 3 days or 4 days of...
I think they're just three.
Somewhere between three and four.
Yeah.
You know, and these things are always like, you know, it's like really, really long infomercials for the parties, you know. But, you know, every once in a while somebody busts out. Every once in a while you get, you know, an Ann Richards here or a Mario Rubio here. So.
Well, and don't we have the possibility of some Ron Paul shenanigans at the Republican convention?
We have the possibility of some Joe Biden shenanigans,
yeah,
he's
exactly.
Crash in the party.
Yeah,
I thought you meant he would be talking.
You know, Paul doesn't have an official speaking part, but he's going to be around, right?
Aren't his delegates though planning some insurgency tactics?
Like
boycotting different votes and trying to get a vote to use their, trying to get a delegate vote so that they can, you know, promise their delegates to Ron Paul instead of just the formality of giving them all to Mitt Romney.
I guess the argument against that would be that they had all those primaries where they could have voiced that concern, and they didn't really, you know.
Well, to quote,
bring any,
to quote
bring any muscle to it.
To quote the email that I got from a Ron Paul supporter that when I maybe said the same thing in a story, how dare you not believe that he won all those primaries?
Well, I mean, you know, the primaries, you know, the numbers are the numbers.
Yes,
you know,
they are.
You know, they have some, you know. If these were real conventions, you could do these kinds of things at conventions that, you know, you could do, you know, you could withdraw your vote, you could do all of these things. But, you know, the conventions are pageants now. They're not really political events. They're not events where people make decisions about the direction of the party. They're places where the party advertises the position usually of its presidential candidate and of the, you know, the part of the values that it wants to present to the voters over the next, you know, 60 or 70 days.
It's not like the convention on West Wing? Where
no, it's not like, and it's not, I mean, it's not like the conventions that you read about in novels from the 50s. It's just, you know, they don't really do substantive political work there. They do marketing.
So really the thing to watch basically is, like what you said, is Ted Cruz capable of being a good speaker on national television? And beyond that, there's just not a lot going on.
Is he right at this point? The question is Ted Cruz a good pitch man, and does he bring a new audience for the Republicans that will benefit them in the November elections? And that's really, you know, speaker by speaker, that's what's going on at both of the conventions. Does this component of this convention present something that's going to energize our voters or depress the other side's voters in a way that benefits us in November? That's what they're trying to do.
I'm curious to see, you know, at the Democratic convention, what the DNC's message is behind making Julian Castro their keynote. And is it a message purely to Hispanics, or is it a message to Texas? You know, y'all have been irrelevant for us for a lot of years. We're seeing, you know, the demographics, and we think somewhere down the line you are going to be a player for us. Or is that purely to Hispanics? Because there are a lot of Democratic Hispanics they could have
I think the present tense thing is it's, you know, Hispanics, we're receptive to Hispanics and to their needs and to their wishes and policies that they want and those kinds of things, and the Republicans aren't. They're trying to draw a contrast. The Republicans are trying to erase the contrast. And so, you know, the Republicans actually get the first stab at this. So Ted Cruz tries to erase that, you know, the party is welcoming, you know, it's not a thing, we share your values. Castro will come in with the opposite argument. And, you know, if you just play those two side by side, you see that sort of sub-argument that's being played to the Hispanic electorate right now.
Where are the Texas delegates housed in relation to the convention
for
the Democrats?
Actually, the location is closer to the convention center for the Texas Democrats than it is for the Texas Republicans. I think Jay said they're staying, you know, 45 minutes out or something. Right. We're staying about 25 minutes out in the bustling metropolis of Concord, North Carolina.
Of course, it makes sense, right? Because you want to be nicer to the people that you need to attract.
Right. I mean, if you're in a swing state,
I'm not sure Concord.
I have a good friend who went to Ohio doing some business up there and came back and said, you should see what it's like to watch television in a swing state. He said it's a completely different experience. It hadn't happened in Texas since 1976. It's, you know, those guys get the front row seats. Those are the guys that they're really pitching for, you know, so the Ohios and the Pennsylvanias and the Wisconsins and, you know, those kinds of guys are going to be in the front row seats. And states that are in the bag one way or the other, Texas being a leading example, you know, those guys get to sit up in the nosebleed seats.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, some people have been complaining a little bit. It sounds like, you know, wondering why they're getting punished for being such loyal Republicans. But, you know, that's what you get, I guess.
You have to be nice to company. You know, we have company here. You have to, you know, we want to impress these people from these swing states, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Of course, Texas isn't a swing state for the Dems, though. You were going to say that Concord is not exactly right at the convention, it sounded like.
No, it's, I mean, it's...
You're still not happy about your 25-minute commute.
I think I have to be on the bus every morning at 6:15 a.m. That's early.
Wow.
For those
like
of
middle
you...
school. Especially since convention business usually starts about noon.
Exactly. Exactly.
Give you plenty of time to tour the hall, look at the buttons and the bumper stickers.
And I think the business at the Tribune is about to start as well, so we should probably stop this and get to work.
All right.
And if you have questions or comments or, you know, tips for Emily on how to spend her time on the bus, you know, any good podcast recommendations,
Travel
perhaps,
Scrabble,
send them to tribcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Ross, Ben, Emily,
Our engineer, David Alvarez,
a very professional, you know, nice engineer
and
in this new studio. It's very exciting. I'm Reed Hamilton. Thanks for listening. You're live whenever you want to go.
Do I say that?
Yes.
Yeah.
In your own it's voice. Tribcast, not Tribecast, which some people do.
Welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribecast.